Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This is episode 181, and today I have on Shai Schechter from Right Message. Shai, how's it going?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's just into the summer vacation here, the kids' first week out of school, so everyone is adjusting to what our schedules are and where people are working and how and all this stuff. It's a mild disaster, but we're managing so far.
You get long vacations, which I guess is better for the kids than for the grown-ups. But you get very long vacations. How, like, this is, they're still going another couple of weeks here.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You get 6 weeks in the summer. I think you get a lot more, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. Because, I mean, so compared to the US, we get very little. And I think it's nice. Like, what, you know, whatever, 6 or 8 weeks in the summer, I think is really nice for the kids and for the parents, because the alternative, like in the US, it's like 3 months. Like, right. 12, 13 weeks, and like kids go back to school and they've forgotten how to learn, and the parents are like totally burnt out. I like it. Like, here in France, the kids have about 8 weeks off in the summer, and then through the year they have 4 different 2-week breaks. So it's really nice. Like, they kind of go to school most of the year and kind of stay in the groove. So it's nice.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you forget everything you learned in the last year when you're off for 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I go away for a week and I'm like, where's the keyboard on this thing? I don't know what to do.
So welcome to the parenting podcast. People thought this was a startup podcast.
No, it's true. It's where we were talking before we started recording that. I mean, we're gonna talk a little bit about Right Message and what you guys are doing there, because it's really cool. We're using it at Castos, and I think it's performing very well. And you guys have come out with some really cool stuff recently, like this week. But I want to talk to begin with a little bit about kind of what your team looks like. You guys raised, so you're partners with Brennan Dunn in Right Message. You guys raised some money to start with, instead of kind of going the pure bootstrapping route. We'd love to kind of talk about how that went, what your team looks like now, and what the dynamic is with having a little bit of money in the bank, and how you guys think about that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So the first thing I should say is we didn't plan to take money.
Okay, interesting.
If we go back to kind of the beginning, Right Message started as very much a side evening project, right? So it was kind of, Brennan and I had been talking a lot about this idea of personalizing a marketing website. And we'd both got there over the years by, both of us had software developer backgrounds and then had moved into marketing. He built up a website called W Freelancing. He was kind of teaching a lot about what he was learning about content marketing, about all that good stuff. And I had moved from a software consultancy I was running. As I learned more about marketing and how to market my own business, I started moving into helping people with their marketing as well. And what both of us were seeing was this idea of, if you use a bit of software on a marketing site, you can make really cool things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were chatting about this, and Brennan's like, and both of us by this point had been kind of consulting, helping people set up or segment their audience, personalize their marketing website, increase conversions that way. And he's like, there should be a product where people can do this without us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we had all these marketers who, their minds were blown that this stuff was possible, but unless they had the budget to hire us as consultants, they weren't able to do it. We could kind of, Brennan had put together this little JavaScript that he would give to get that working in their site, and these marketers are like, I don't know what to do. Where do I install this JavaScript? What do I do? And so we're like, there should be a product where, right, where you can just, yep, you can point and click and you can set this stuff up without needing to code. And the idea was, I'd build it in a couple of evenings. He had built up this audience that it would be perfect for. It was just going to tie into Drip as its email marketing platform. It was a very, very simple tool. And that was all this was meant to be. And it kind of grew from there. And so, to answer your question about investment, it was a few months in, we said we weren't going to build anything until we'd both learned the hard way, right? That startup thing of like, we're going to build it and then we're going to launch it and then we're going to get tons of customers and that kind of,
surely, right?
Yeah, exactly. Build it and they will come, but they won't. And we'd both done that in the past with previous businesses. And so this time we said, we're not writing a line of code unless we have pre-order money in the bank. And that's going to be kind of a little bit of validation. And we did that and we started building it. And then one of our first customers came to us and was like, he's like, I know you're going to say no, because he knew that we'd both always bootstrapped. That was our thing. That was what we wanted to be doing. He's like, you're going to say no, but I think you should take investment.
Because
it'll speed up development. It was just the two of us. We both had other businesses. We weren't working on this full time. This customer was basically like, I want the finished product quicker. That was the motivation from his point of view. But also, he's like, you know, it would accelerate the business. You know, no one else is really doing this like you are. And the sooner you can get it out there, the better.
Yeah.
It was really just take money to accelerate. We didn't need the money. We had a bit of income coming in from it. We had income from our previous businesses. And so we're like, yeah, you're right. We don't really want to take investment, and we listed our reasons why, and we were both kind of in agreement with them, and I think they match what a lot of bootstrappers say, which was things like, you know, we want to do what's best for our customers. We don't want to have this board watching over our shoulder, and we don't want to have to be doing things that are to please the investors when they might not be in the best interest of the customers. And so he's like, okay, I'll put this syndicate of investors together and we won't have any say, right? You'll get the money. We won't, unless you ask for our help, we won't, you know. And we're like, we don't have this board. We don't want to be making a decision and have this board seat that's like overruling us. He's like, no, you'll keep full control then.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're like, okay, but you know, finding investors is so time consuming, right? You hear these stories that you basically have to stop building the product and stop moving forward because you're spending your time on pitch decks and finding the investors, and you know, it's a real slowdown before the speed up. And he's like, okay, I'll put together the a syndicate of investors. You won't do anything. Like, leave it to me.
Sounds like a great deal.
Right? And so at this point, we're like, okay, I guess we were never anti-investment. We were anti those consequences or those, you know. And once all of those were taken off the table, we're like, well, now there's not really a reason not to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give up some percentage of the company, but actually that's probably worth it for what we're talking about here. So we did, and we took the money, and he put together this syndicate for us. And once that happened, then a bunch of other people kind of came out of the woodwork. The second syndicate ended up opening up as well. And then a bunch of direct investors, kind of people that we knew, who were saying, you know, I know you guys, I'm not going to go through this syndicate and pay a cut to someone, but I want to invest. And so that was what we did. We took this money. This was the end of 2017. And we used that to hire and to accelerate.
Cool. Are you able to talk about kind of how much you raised and what percentage of the company you gave up in total?
Yeah, so it was about $600,000 in the end. I have this fantastic email from Anchor, who was the customer who kicked this whole thing off, who suggested we do this. It's this brilliant email, the first one he sent, where he's like, I think you should, I think you should take this investment, maybe, you know, $500,000 or $1 million or whatever.
Or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter right, after that point. I know that's crazy, isn't it?
Right, that's just brilliant.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, $1 million here, $1 million there. It ended up being, we planned to do about 500. We ended up at a little above 600.
Yeah.
And percentage-wise, it's kind of hard to say because it was we used what's called a safe. It's this, I don't know if you know.
I don't know the term, no.
Okay, so it's a Y Combinator-created investment vehicle. They basically made it. It's similar to a convertible note.
Okay.
Where it's kind of, here's this money and you owe it back eventually. The difference is you don't owe it back eventually. You're not in debt. The investors end up kind of pending joining the cap table based on future things happening.
Okay, and interesting.
The reason, so it's that same model that convertible notes have, in my understanding of them, I'm not sure, but my understanding is the way they work is that the idea is like it's too early to value the business when you're kind of at a seed stage. So we're going to defer the decision. And next time there's another investment round, or when you exit or you're acquired, whatever the valuation is there, that's the valuation that these early investors are going to get, but they're going to get it at a discount.
Yep.
So whatever that valuation is, they're going to get it slightly better.
That's great.
Right? So it defers the decision of how much the company is worth until later. So it's kind of hard to say, but the closest you can say is that it was about 11%, all being well. That's what we might end up that's what it might end up being.
Right, right. No, that's great. I mean, so, you know, so we took some money as part of joining Tiny Seed. And I thought a lot along the same lines of, you know, the podcasting space is really dynamic right now. We sure. are already in the market, but if we took a little bit of funding, we could accelerate our growth, invest in both product and marketing like you guys have. Mm-hmm. And do it in a super, super easy way. I mean, my involvement in taking this money and joining Tiny Seed was about, I don't know, an hour of work probably total, including a couple of calls with Rob and Einar and filling out an application to get like a terrific opportunity, I think is like a no-brainer. It sounds like you guys were in a similar boat where, you know, this person was basically like, I'll do all the work. We just want the product. And I'll do the work to put together syndicate to get some money for you guys to accelerate your growth. So I think if you're in that kind of situation, like you guys probably saw, it takes away a lot of your objections as a founder or founders to not taking investment, right?
Right. And I guess that's one of the things that you have to do as an entrepreneur is kind of you reason things from first principles. You can't keep these assumptions in your head of like, I don't like investment, so that's not a good thing to do.
Right. Right.
Right. You reason it like, why don't I like him? You know, why have I shied away from that in the past? Break it down and you know, reason it from first principles and end up saying, well, actually, no, this all in all is a good move.
Yeah. 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 If you can not spend 2 years raising money and stop building a product and give up total control of your interest in the company and a board seat where someone's breathing down your neck all the time, if you can not have to give all that stuff up, then I think it's a fantastic opportunity to accelerate the company like you guys are seeing. So yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And so how many people are you now on the team?
So we are now 4 full-time. I should say, and this I guess is where the story gets more interesting, we have been bigger than that in the past.
Mm, okay.
We grew too quickly once we took the money,
yeah.
Which I don't think we're the only ones to do that. I think that's, from speaking to people, it's not an uncommon pattern. And I don't know if I would... It might be kind of overly dramatic to say that we agreed. I don't know whether we, oftentimes you have to do that. You've got this money in the bank now and it's like, we need to spend it.
Yeah.
And you spend it on the assumption that you're going to grow at a certain pace. And sometimes you don't grow at that pace. So there is kind of this constant thing of kind of how, you know, how cautious or how loose are we going to be with this money? Now coming from a bootstrap background, we didn't go spending on crazy things that we didn't need, but we hired in a way where as we kind of, it accelerated us in the short term, and then we're still kind of seeing some churn and we're seeing some, you know, our product market fit maybe wasn't quite as right as we thought it was at the beginning.
Yep. Yep.
And then you kind of, you may have to backpedal a little bit. So that's difficult.
Yeah. But, yeah. No, I mean, I totally hear you. For us, we, you know, we took the Tiny Seed investment and haven't spent really any of it yet. But are actually put a job offer out to our first full-time marketing hire this morning. So very excited about
great.
That.
And
about, yeah, no, I'm super jazzed about it. Cause I mean, this person is a rock star and is going to come in and really shake things up and kind of put us on the offense, which is awesome. But it will be the first time that we will not be a profitable company since like 6 months into the business.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I know that feeling.
So, I mean, like, I know like we took this money because we want to spend it and accelerate our growth. And the goal is like, whatever the number is, $500,000, $100,000, $1 million, you want to say, I'm going to invest this money so that basically when the money runs out, we'll be more profitable than kind of we are today, right? That's the thing, is like you have $100,000 or $500,000, you're going to start spending it with the runway that you know you can catch up with before the money runs out, plus some kind of safety margin. And so,
yeah
I mean, so I think it sounds like you guys were down that path and that math wasn't working out, that you were going to run out of money before your revenue caught up with your expenses.
Right. Yeah. The parachute wasn't opening as quickly as we thought it would.
And, yeah. Yeah.
You're getting closer to the ground.
Yeah. And so we talked about this a little bit at FemtoConf this year, that you guys have pivoted, talking about kind of more the product and product market fit. I know the initial product was a lot around personalizing the whole website to, you know, someone comes and they come and they're already a subscriber and they're tagged with this or that, or they've had a custom event of having an interest in this. you show them a different version of a website or a page or a call to action or something like that than a new anonymous visitor, right? And you guys have pivoted from that slightly to a different kind of implementation of the same personalization?
Yeah. So I, to this day, I don't know whether it counts as a pivot or not, but we pivoted what the main thing that we were marketing is. Well, I guess what you could essentially say is we took what we were selling and we made that be the kind of the higher level tier, the upmarket thing. We brought something else in at the lower point.
Okay.
Essentially because everyone was looking at it and being like, this is fantastic. This looks great. It's overwhelming to me. It's kind of, it's two steps away from what I need, right?
Oh,
it's,
interesting. Okay.
And so we brought in the thing that we now kind of sell. If you go to our, you know, you go to our homepage, the thing that we're now talking about as what Right Message does is this kind of this more entry level idea where we basically said, okay, you've already got calls to action, opt-in forms on your website. You understand those, you know, they pop up and they ask for an email address, and using the kind of the segmentation engine that we had already built, we can help you make those, we can let you swap those out for something that works much smarter, that converts better, that is, gives a better experience to your visitors by doing that same thing that you just described of saying kind of, who is this person?
Mm-hmm.
Are they a brand new anonymous visitor? Well, then the newsletter is probably a good thing to put in front of them. If they've already subscribed, that's a terrible thing to put in front of them.
Yeah.
It's irritating to them. Like, they've just clicked through to your site. They've been reading your stuff for years and you're like, hey, give me your email address. That's a bad experience. And it's a wasted opportunity for you to pitch something that's more appropriate, that's actually going to help them based on where they are now. And even for those anonymous visitors, even top of funnel, this idea of not everyone, maybe you have a couple of lead magnets, maybe you have a few things you can offer. And so can we ask them a question, or can we look at what they've been reading to decide on something more appropriate to offer them? Or even if you only have one thing to offer, you only have this one entry-level newsletter or free email course or whatever it is there, could you find out something about them, maybe again by asking them, you know, what they need help with, and use that to just describe what you're offering differently?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just by doing that, you see conversions go up.
Yeah.
Because if someone's reading what you're offering, they're like, all they're trying to do is decide, does this work in my world? Like, can this actually help me? And the more you can do to just to kind of connect the dots for them between what you're offering and how it's going to help them. Same as a salesperson does in real life, right?
Right.
A good salesperson, you don't read off a script. You ask some questions, you find out about someone, you tailor what you're offering. So yeah, so we kind of pivoted, if you like, to saying, rather than personalize your entire website where it's very overwhelming to know where to start, let's just give you these segmented, personalized kind of survey and opt-in widgets for your site, perhaps replacing the ones that you've already got from a third party, or you're using the ones that your email marketing tool provides, but these ones can do it better for you. And that's a much easier kind of, it's a much easier entry point for people.
Yeah. So this is something that I find fascinating about what you guys are doing. And we're looking at getting into an aspect of the podcasting market that is, would be like a new implementation of podcasting. And something that I'm scared about or thinking a lot about how we could roll it out is, how are we going to educate our customers or potential customers to adopt this new way of thinking about something that they already do in a different way? So like you were saying at the beginning, personalize your whole website by customer, you know, behaviors and interests and stuff like that. And it sounds like that was just too much. It's like blowing people's mind. They don't know where to start, tough to implement and get on board. But then you dial it down or back or however you want to say it to, okay, it's an opt-in form. You already have opt-in forms on your site, or you should at least. And we're just going to make them smarter now. It's like a lower mental hurdle for your customers to get over.
100%. Yeah. It's the next stepping stone. It's kind of I guess marketing is always education, right?
Yeah.
It's always, and if someone's already kind of very solution aware, then it's just educating them on why your product is better. But when people are a step earlier, it's kind of how much education are we willing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can, the Constant Contact or some of the really early email marketing tools, their marketing was literally they had to go around and persuade people why you should email people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a huge education hurdle. And you know, you can choose to do that, but especially if you're bootstrapped or you're close to, it's, that's a difficult game to be playing, to like to change the entire perception of a market. So yeah, I guess it's, you want to be looking for, this is what we found anyway, we want to be looking for what could we do that was just one step ahead of what people are doing now.
Mm-hmm.
When we, before we pivoted, pretty much 100% of our customers were, they had switched to us from, they were doing nothing before. They weren't doing, you know, we didn't have a competitor that they were moving from.
Yeah.
Which kind of the, you might naively think is a really great place to be, right? You have no competitors, you get all the market, but in practice, if they're not doing something already, it's a, then you have to, you don't just have to persuade them why your product's better, you have to persuade them why they should start doing this thing at all. And persuading anyone to start doing something new is very difficult.
Yeah, I think especially, I mean, you had that hurdle and you had the, I can imagine, the implementation of personalizing your whole website or even your homepage is massive for someone to think about implementing. You know, if they have four different versions of the copy and images and calls to action, all this stuff that just like, for me, I did, I said, that's cool, but I'm never going to do that because that is way too much work. I have questions about SEO and all this kind of stuff that I'm sure you guys looked at the implementation that your customers had to go through and said, yeah, this is this, we, even if we convince them that it's the right thing, getting it done is gotta be just hard.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing from our side was that we knew that if you actually sit down and do it, the implementation is not nearly as difficult as it sounded.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And that was really frustrating for us. We're like, this is, you know, you can start doing this in 10 minutes and see a conversion increase, but that's 10 minutes after you've got your head around what you should be doing in those 10 minutes, right. And that takes a lot longer.
Right, right.
So it was kind of, and of course, you know, you've said there, you know, I would never sit down and do that. People are, when it's customers and you're trying to sell, people are kind of try and be overly nice, and they don't say I'll never do that. They'll say I'll come back to it in a few months,
right?
Which is never code for I'll never come back, right?
yeah, interesting. So since you guys have kind of started to focus on, you call it right CTA.
Well, I'll just interject briefly. Now that that's become the main thing, we just call it Right Message.
Okay, cool.
But yes, while we were building it, we did call it Right CTA.
Okay, sorry. So the CTA, the pop-up widgets, now inline widgets, are kind of the main entry point that you're kind of talking to customers about. I know your growth has changed quite a bit since you've refocused on this, right?
Yeah, so kind of when we shipped that, we grew like 40% in that month.
Yeah, amazing. All like new customers or bringing back previously churned or?
It was a combination. It was, some of it was new customers, some of it was churned, was previously churned, because a lot of people had, we always do things iteratively. So we had kind of shipped bits of what this CTA, of what then became this CTA builder along the way to customers. And so we had a lot of people who had churned saying like, you know, I like the CTAs that we have, but it doesn't do this yet, but it doesn't do that.
Mm.
So once we actually shipped the full CTA platform, we could just go back to those people and say, there's some really good advice that I wish I had learned earlier. Be really like good at tagging why people churned so that you can revisit it as soon as you have the thing that they needed.
Okay. And how did you guys do that? I know you use Help Scout for your kind of support stuff. How did you tag people?
Yeah, so we generally just tag them in Help Scout.
Okay.
We just be organized with those tags. So someone, that was actually, now it's a bit different. Now we use the Bare Metrics cancellation tool. So people aren't canceling through Help Scout anymore. They're canceling through that, which is, so that helps because that kind of keeps things organized. You can pull reports from there. But yeah, just have something that, and the same for feature requests. And this is something I'm not good at. I if anyone knows of a tool that does this really well, I would love to find it. But something where kind of when people make feature requests, that you can just keep a really good grasp on the fact that those particular people wanted that feature,
mm-hmm.
so that you can tell them when you have it.
So we use Feature Upvote. So featureupvote.com. And it's great. So it's basically like an open forum type of thing where people can go and suggest new features. and then other people can go and comment and or upvote to them.
Awesome. Yes, that's what I want.
Yep.
Whether it's, yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing. So we use it. So it's just feedback.castus.com. Someone comes in and says, I want a thing in like email and help scout. And we say, great, go add it to feedback.castus.com so that other people can upvote it. And when something gets to the top of the queue there, it goes straight into development for us. So it just takes all the decision making.
I've seen things like it kind of more at the enterprise level. This looks, this might be what we need. Okay.
No,
it's
great. Yeah, for sure. No, because we had the same problem managing customer feedback. Is and we're like a relatively like low price point, high number of customers, especially like considering our WordPress plugin type of scenario. So we had some months hundreds of new requests, and you're like, I can't possibly tag all those people in Help Scout and go back and evaluate it and clear all the ones out that we've already fulfilled or decided not to do or something like that. So yeah, this is a good way to keep track of that for us. We don't keep track of cancellations or failed trials as well as we should. I'm interested. Can you tell me more about the Baremetrics cancellation tool? Like how does it work in the app, and does it work for trials as well?
So it does work for trials as well. It's essentially a widget that they give you some code to put into your app when the cancel button is pressed. And so instead of that cancel button triggering your some kind of endpoint in your app that goes off to Stripe and says kill the subscription or kill the trial, it pops this form up to them with a multiple choice question of, would you mind telling us why you're canceling?
Mm-hmm.
A text field where they can elaborate on that. And then when they press cancel on that, then the widget like kind of sends a little signal into your app to say, now do the actual cancellation.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's just this kind of interstitial on the way that's capturing that data, and then you do the cancel however you were doing it before.
Yeah, gotcha. Interesting. Okay.
So that's nice.
Yeah, cool.
So to go back, you asked about where those new customers came from. A lot of them were churns that then we reached back out to them. Some of them were new customers. A lot of them were new customers. And then some of them were people. We told everyone on our list that we were bringing this new thing out, that the old stuff, the full personalization suite, was going to become much more expensive. The new things were coming in at a price point similar to where you used to be able to get the full suite. Now you were only going to get the CTAs. Mm. So there were also some people who had clearly been following along on our list. They'd been on the fence. They were those people who said, I'm going to sign up one day for the full thing. And this was the kind of the urgency they needed to say, well, yeah, now is the time to get in, because at least now I'll get the full package.
Yeah.
Said, we'll grandfather that for life.
That's great. And like 40% growth in a month from all those people coming back in. That's amazing. that's a good month.
Yeah.
I know that since you guys released some of this functionality, that some of the competing tools like email marketing tools or opt-in tools are kind of hot on your tails. And in some cases, like kind of blatantly copying what you're doing. How is that unfolding, like emotionally, for you guys? And from a strategic and actionable standpoint?
Yeah, it's a great question. So yes, there is a lot of, sometimes you get something where a competitor does something and you're like, maybe that's just coincidental. We thought of it, they thought of it, fine. Some of it, for example, where a competitor took part of the code that we use to the point that it still had the RM for write message in it.
Amazing.
Then you're like, okay, I didn't miss the coincidence.
Amazing.
We don't follow what they're doing that much. We normally hear about these things from customers. They see more of what our competitors are doing than we do. But we don't sit there poring over what they're doing, because we know where we're going with this. We work incredibly closely with customers on what we should be doing next.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's often easier to watch the competitors, but it's not as like, I mean, we probably didn't do enough of it. We probably still don't do enough of it. I don't think you can ever really do enough of it, but the closer we work with customers, we get on calls with them, we do all that kind of that stuff that you kind of, you hate, but you know you should do in the early days. Now I love it. I used to hate it. But it's just not. Sorry.
No, it's magic, isn't it? I mean, you get on a call with customers or exchange a bunch of emails, and the peeling back the onion of kind of what they need and why is magic. Yeah.
Yeah. So we do a lot of that, and we don't really watch competitors that closely. But yeah, you hear about this stuff happening. You see when they've taken stuff, and it's you can choose to take it as it can get you down, or you can choose to take it as flattery, and you know, you just have to do the latter. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of space in the market for multiple companies. You have to see the funny side, and it is when they take something so blatantly that it is amusing. There was actually one this week who sent out an email to their newsletter showcasing how they'd kind of done a teardown of a website and how they were making fantastic use of segmenting and personalizing. That website was using us for that.
Oh really?
and you know, it was right there. It powered by Right Message.
Oh gracious!
So again, that was not. Maybe they knew that. Maybe it was intentional. Maybe they were helping us out and you know, flattered by it. But those kind of things are cool. It's cool to see your stuff in the wild. It's cool to see, you know, when it's cool when I go to a website and that I don't know about for the first time and they're using our product. That's awesome to see.
Yeah.
And it's that same thing. If a competitor is doing something that you're doing, it's kind of that same thing. You know.
Yeah.
We're being noticed.
Yeah. Backtracking a little bit to your team and taking money, one of the big kind of talking points around the Tiny Seed group, so there's 9 companies in Tiny Seed right now, is how to allocate the resources that we all have. For us, it was, you know, like 70%, 75% marketing and like 20-25% product or engineering that we're investing our money. How did you guys, so it's you and Brennan with the investment, I assume you went kind of mostly full time into Right Message, but then how do you think about allocating those resources and like the decision making process of where to hire and what to do with that money?
Yeah, so we actually met with a growth coach very early on who really helped us with this. And one of the things that he did, he basically said, when your company is doing about $500,000 a year, what do you think the org chart will look like? And we mapped that out. And at various points in the future, like, what do you think the org chart would need to look like for a company like this in the future? And then kind of saying, now let's fill those blocks. Like, some of those will be filled by yourselves. You can be in more than one of the boxes mm-hmm. in the early stages of a company, but filling that out and saying, you know, if you're going to be wearing 2 hats, be intentional, know that you're wearing those 2 hats. So kind of mapping out that org chart for the company and yeah, filling in, this is one that we actually should hire someone for right now. And this one, I can keep that hat for a little bit longer. So in practice, what that ended up being was we hired 1 marketer, 1 customer success person, which kind of had a bit of sales in it as well, 1 support. And at one point we had 2 engineers hired as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, we've now scaled that back full time. We just now have me and Brennan and then 1 on marketing and 1 on product. And support, we kind of very intentionally said, we should handle this internally. Like, we should handle this. We should round robin this between ourselves for a little bit longer. Because you get, oh, there's so much value in staying in support.
Yeah. And so when you say keep it to yourselves, it's you and Brennan, or does your marketing person and get involved in support as well?
The marketing and the engineer as well.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
great to hear.
Everyone, we like, ownership of it is kind of me and Brennan.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, everyone has an account in Help Scout, and everyone will do things from time to time.
No, I love it. I love it. I was interviewing this person that we have an offer out for the marketing role, and was telling her, yep, you will have an account in Help Scout and you will do support, not all the time. And I don't expect you to do a lot of technical stuff, because I mean, I don't want my marketing person to be a developer, but I do want them to be in Help Scout and even just looking at the tickets and yeah. reading the language. And if they can respond to something, then great, because then that allows we have a part-time customer support person. in the US. And really, it's just because of the time zone difference for me. I would love to continue to handle support. If I was in the US, I probably would, but it's 6 hours different to the East Coast for me. And it's just a deal break. I'm not going to stay up till 10 o'clock every night answering Help Scout tickets. And I don't want my customers to be kind of left hanging basically after noon Eastern time when I stop working at 6 o'clock here. So yeah, so Eileen helps with support, does a bit of design as well for us, which is super cool. She did all of the new stuff with our new website. But yeah, so, and our two developers that are full-time, both do support every day. They're in Help Scout every day and they love it. They love it because they get to see their bugs and edge cases. And it's just, it's great because it makes them super autonomous too. So we, there's a bug in Help Scout, they're tagged, the ticket's assigned to them and they own it and they go fix it or implement it or put it in our next sprint or something. And then that ticket belongs to them. And when it's resolved, they respond to the customer and it makes the whole kind of life cycle of a customer complete without either myself or Eileen, who are kind of, you know, heading up support, really having to get back involved in it again. And I think culturally it's just fantastic.
Yeah. And it's great for customers as well, because there is nothing worse than you writing into support and getting kind of that like first line, you know, like canned response that doesn't really, they haven't really.
Yeah.
And then, or maybe it's a authentic response, but they have to pass it up the chain. Whereas here, if a developer looks at that ticket, it might be something that they can just go, you know what, I'm just going to fix this. I'm going to, you know, we've got enough kind of tests and so on in our code base that you can go in, like fix that thing or implement. If it's something small, just go and throw it in. And your reply to the support ticket 10 minutes after it came in is, I've just fixed that for you.
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, you'd lose that as you scale bigger and bigger, but the longer you can keep it for, I think it's great to have in the culture.
Yeah.
What I will say is I wouldn't put those. What I wouldn't want is for something to have something like live chat being able to distract people when they're trying to do their work. Like, you know, it makes sense to kind of say, right, today is your day where you're going to be keeping an eye on support, but you don't want someone being able to be constantly interrupted anytime a support ticket comes in.
Yeah. So for us, and it's a little bit of time zone magic. So all our two developers are kind of over in this part of the world time zone wise. So in the morning, they never look at support and they have all morning to work on, you know, features or bugs or whatever engineering stuff. And then they both basically say, okay, the first part of the afternoon, I'll look at Help Scout, see if there's anything kind of major that needs my attention. Otherwise, I'll probably go back to code. And if there's an issue that is really, really major, they'll address it and push a patch or something like that. If not, then they'll kind of prioritize it. And typically, I think they work on bugs about a half a day a week is kind of where we've settled.
Right.
Which is definitely a balance. I mean, I think I would imagine WriteMessage and Castos are at similar points in kind of product maturity to where there's not a lot of barn fires these days, which is great. I mean, God, a year and a half ago, there were a lot of fires like all the time. But at this point, like everything is really stable and in a good way, I guess, like things move a little slower now than they did before, which is cool because we don't have to ship stuff every day just to keep the boat afloat. And we can be more intentional about, okay, everything's good. We're going to work on this thing for a month and then ship this big major feature, which is nice from a stability standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that reminds me actually. One thing that we kind of learned was, because we had a couple of points earlier on where, especially as we were trying to kind of find that product market fit more and more, we had points where we would just kind of, everyone who was involved in engineering was heads down building something rather big. And there's a downside to that, which is it looks like you're not making progress.
Yeah.
From the outside. So one thing we were kind of really intentional about was kind of either showing, like, as you're building something out, we were like just showing customers the whole time, like talking about what we were doing, where we were up to, and just keep letting people keep a pulse on it. Because a lot of people are interested in following along, especially when our market, you know, some of the people in our audience might have businesses that are kind of similar to ours. So it was cool for them to see the progress. Or we would just make sure if there was some big feature being worked on, that there were also some little things being shipped along the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just so you could, it just kept that kind of that momentum. And every time you can tell customers, you show them something even tiny that you've shipped, you get that you know, you hear back from them, those people that are excited for that feature, and it just spurs you on. And yeah,
this is a balance that I think we're still trying to find, is when and how to announce kind of small features versus big. I mean, big features are obvious, they get their own blog post and page and email and stuff like that. Little features, I think what we're settling on now, and haven't quite done it yet, but Help Scout does that, and a couple of their tools is give, like Wildbit does it, they give like a monthly product update email. And I like that for like smaller things, to say this month we released, you know, four or five smaller things and this one huge thing, which you probably have already heard about. But these other things you may or may not have seen, and here they are, and this is kind of what they're all about.
Notion does a really good job of it as well.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check it out. Yeah, we use Notion, so I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, again, with the like the monthly, it's a cool email.
Yeah.
We've not been disciplined enough with that. We often, but we'll even, like, I'll probably post tomorrow on our Facebook group just being like, here's the half a dozen things that we shipped this week that weren't exciting enough to tell you each time one happened, but actually that's some cool progress this week.
Yep.
It's good to share.
Yeah, for sure. So, where do you think Write Message is going? Like, what does the next kind of 2 years look like for you guys?
2 years is a long time.
Yeah. Or what is the point you can see on the horizon, I guess?
Yeah. So we're at a really cool, interesting point right now, which is the point where we have got back, like we talked about at the beginning, where you go from making a profit to suddenly making a loss each month. When you take that investment, you start spending it. We've just about got back to the black. So everything's a little bit different. We're hovering around the break-even profitable point now. Mm-hmm. And that's very exciting. That lets you do lots of things that you kind of couldn't do before because you were watching the bank balance dwindling. And now you can kind of breathe a little bit. And next couple of years is just, it's for the time being, we keep going how we're going. We've just shipped this new, you know, part to our product, or new entry-level product in the CTAs that seems to be going well. We've got some features to build out there to make it even better. And we keep growing how we grow. We keep doing this. We're switching more to inbound marketing now. We did a lot of outbound early on. Mm. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, at the beginning, you had to go through a demo call. That was the only way in. There was no self-sign-up.
Right.
And now we're moving more to like content and the kind of that traditional inbound funnel, which is cool. And it's very much Brennan is insanely good at that stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, for sure.
It's good that we finally get to really accelerate that. We're churning out three blog posts a week at the moment, and they're high quality, and he writes them in about 20 minutes. It's ridiculous.
Wow. That's amazing.
Watching him write, it's insane. So I'm glad we get to do that stuff now. And we just, we try and hit those next milestones, keep working with customers, keep iterating, and we'll probably start growing the team again at some point, but we don't need to right now.
Mm. Yeah, it's the nice thing about not having institutional money, but having enough, you know, a little bit of money to say, we're going to do this thing, dip into not being profitable for some period of time. And then once you come back to that kind of break-even point, say, okay, we have money in the bank, we can go spend money again to accelerate growth again and hire some people, and know hopefully that you'll come back up to that profitable or break-even point in the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
I listened to one of my favorite podcasts is Bootstrap Web with Brian Castle and Jordan Gall. And Jordan and Carthook they've taken a ton of money. Well, I shouldn't say a ton of money. From my perspective, yeah, they take several rounds, whatever. And you know, Jordan talks about it on the show, like when we get back to profitable, it's time to hire again. And like time to hire, I mean, they have 30 people now or something. Do you think in the same way that like when you guys are getting back up to profitable at this point, you said you'll probably hire again sometime. Are you always wanting to hover around break even, or is fund strapping really like you're going to take money one time and then it's going to be a cash cow kind of business for you?
Yeah. So that's kind of what we're not planning on taking another round or anything like that. So yeah, more the latter of what you said, kind of, but we'll see. Like right now that's definitely the case.
Yeah.
These things don't have to be set in stone, but yeah, that's at least for the time being, is kind of, you know, let's have it growing more and more, and we'll start doing, you know, profit shares with the team, and then see from there.
Yeah,
I'm sure we will hire more, but we don't need to right now, and we're not going to kind of do that thing where we intentionally keep going into the red.
Yeah, from a personal stress standpoint, I think Jordan is on his business is on a different kind of trajectory than we want to be on. And sounds like you're saying the same thing, that like I'm much happier growing at a slightly slower pace, but having the kind of peace of mind that there's a bunch of money in the bank and a good runway, that we're profitable when we get super profitable, and then maybe it's time to cut back in the profitability and reinvest in the business some.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like it doesn't have to be forever, and especially that direction. It's harder to go the other direction.
Yeah,
although it's very doable.
Yeah,
and I know plenty of companies who have gone from the heavily invested world and scaled it back and back to something that's closer to bootstrapping almost. I think Wistia have got stories of that, and Gumroad,
mm-hmm.
So kind of a big. But yeah, that's the nature of it. You can do that, and then a couple of years time, you can decide, actually, we're bored of just making money. It's let's go lose some again.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, this is we've talked around this a fair bit, but it is like a whole nother dynamic to the business that you have to consider. And it's not like I think either of us have the amount of money that we can go do a bunch of stupid stuff. But to think about profitability as a lever you can pull, just like a lot of other levers you pull in your business, is an interesting thing that I'm kind of just the first time I've had to think about, because before it was like, okay, do I have any money in the bank? Great, I'll pay myself. And otherwise the money just stays in the bank. And now it's like, okay, there's money in the bank. If I spend it, it will be worth more in the future than that money just sitting there. So let's go spend it and kind of win, and how to make those decisions is like a whole nother aspect to running a business. And SaaS is weird because it's all delayed and stuff, but yeah, it's an interesting adventure for sure.
Yep.
Cool. So, Shai, for folks who want to kind of reach out, learn more about Right Message and connect with you and kind of see what you're up to, where's the best place to reach out?
Yeah, so for me directly, the easiest place is to find me on Twitter. I'm at ShaiSC, so that's at ShaiSC. You can always email me as well, shai@rightmessage.com. And then company itself, rightmessage.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, we're loving it. We're going to implement the inline CTAs here this week, I think, and hopefully kind of kick things up a notch, if you will, in terms of kind of some of our inbound marketing. So yeah, definitely worth checking it out. Yep.
Cool.
Cool. Thanks. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.